Warming temps and heavy rains can spell trouble for your home. Don't wait for a problem. Get a free foundation inspection from PermaSeal. Stay dry, stay protected. For peace of mind, call 800-421-SEAL or visit permaseal.net.
By the way, Brenda and I went to a restaurant called Woody's Friday night. Always have a nice time there. And I noticed as we were sitting there that there was a sign over by the bar, and it said there will be a 3.5% upcharge for credit card purchases. And I guess that's the way of the world. It might have been that way all the time. But I happened to notice it this time and had enough cash in my pocket that I was able to pay with cash. And I don't know that that's going to be the direction we go. It seems like more and more we're going cashless. Some places won't take your cash. But as more attention gets spent on credit card charges and who's paying them, kind of like tips, who's paying them, you wonder if maybe it wouldn't be a good idea just to carry some $20 bills in your pocket and sometimes avoid a 3% upcharge. I did want to talk a little bit about tipping, though, for just a minute. Austin Berg is on the line from the Illinois Policy Institute. You read him, you see him, and you hear him a lot on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Hey, Austin, how are you?
Hey, John, I'm great. How are you?
Good. Before we get started, two things on your social calendar, if I may. Are you ready?
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Okay. You went to the Messi-less soccer match. How much fun was that at Soldier Field?
It was actually the weirdest soccer match I've ever been to. So there was horrible traffic, as anyone who went to that game knows. And I had a friend who was coming, and he was super late. So I didn't get in till the second half. And he got like halfway down Roosevelt, and he was like, I'm not coming anymore. So you just go in. So I went in the second half by myself. In a pretty full stadium. I was surprised how many people were there.
Oh, my gosh.
And then there were five goals in 30 minutes, and then I left. I left in, like, the 75th minute of the game. It was fantastic. I had a great time.
That's cheating. That's not how you do it. That's amazing.
I cheated. Yeah.
Although, isn't that an interesting argument for putting Soldier Field, the Bears, in Arlington Heights? It's always that way. It's just a nightmare. I know all kinds of stories about people who were going to go to the Bears game and said, screw it. Or in this case, the soccer game, because there's only one way to get there. You know, it's on the west side of the stadium and it's a mess.
It's a mess. And you also had Millennium Park, right? Or Grant Park was fenced off in all sorts of different places. So just watching people try to figure out the maze of even just getting to Soldier Field on a Tuesday night was pretty sad.
If you're new to Chicago, Grant Park and Millennium Park are these vast swaths of green space where we keep fencing and porta potties.
And I believe that had to be for the marathon, right?
Yeah, so, it was.
You know, it's hard to argue against the marathon, but just, yeah, logistical nightmare in terms of Soldier Field access.
And you did not go to Bob Dylan?
I didn't go to Bob Dylan, but I eagerly reviewed the set lists, which is always fun with Bob Dylan shows. Pete went, right? Did Pete Zimmerman go?
Hold on a second. I got to bring Pete up over here. Hey, Pete, did you go to see the show? Pete's the big thumbs up and multiple thumbs up. The review in the paper today was he was almost chatty. It sounded like he was a most gregarious Bob Dylan, and you saw this show, but not here in Chicago. You saw him perform this show in Europe, right?
I saw this show in Milan, and this is his Rough and Rowdy Ways tour. And essentially with that tour is he plays maybe the same 16 or 17 songs every single night in almost the exact same order, but he'll then throw in these little surprises. So in Chicago, I believe he played an old blues standard called Born in Chicago to open the show. Yeah. And then he played a Muddy Waters song later, which is awesome. And his ability to reinvent and recontextualize the American songbook is what is really amazing. So if people want to follow him around North America and see a couple Bob Dylan shows, I would totally, if you have a chance, go see him. Because he's not always like fun to see. Now is a good time.
That's what it sounds like. And he's 82. 82, right?
Yeah, 82 years old.
Let's call for the reason I called. Let's talk about the reason I called you today, and that was some digging you did on the impact of raising sub-minimum wage tipped wages. What's the story on that?
So the story is basically this old Groucho Marx quote about politics, and he says, politics is the art of looking for trouble, finding it everywhere, diagnosing it incorrectly, and applying the wrong remedies. And that is what we see here with this elimination of the sub-minimum wage. It's called, it has a very marketing-centric name. It's called the One Fair Wage campaign. And it basically says, well, if you're getting tips, you need to actually have a base that is that's at $15 plus. Sounds good in theory, but it's in fact going to have a real negative effect on the least fortunate people in Chicago, especially young people seeking jobs and especially migrants seeking jobs.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I must say I was a little surprised at the coverage over the weekend in the Sun-Times and the Tribune. You know, without picking sides, I think it matters how you characterize this. And $16 is more than $9, but the headlines were like tipped wage earners score victory or come out ahead. And I thought, I'm not sure that's true. And that's kind of what you're talking about, right?
Absolutely. There's a lot of tipped workers who did not want this. And the other thing is when people say, oh, they used to get paid $9, now they're getting $15. That's not even the case. If someone's tips didn't make up at least to that higher minimum wage, the business covers that. So there's not people who are taking home $9 an hour. And that, I think, is part of the confusion around this proposal. And we have a lot of research on this question of what happens when you eliminate this tipped wage. And it's that, one, some people who have jobs right now will benefit, right? Because they get a higher base plus their tips, right? But to your point, some servers actually who have jobs now don't like it because they're afraid that tips are going to go away entirely. Leave that aside for a second. The second thing that the research finds is that total earnings in this sector don't rise. Now, how could that be? We're saying they're going to get paid more. How could we pay them more and the wages not rise in total? And it's because what we don't see is the jobs that are lost, that are not added, that would have otherwise been. Those are jobs that we talk about needing for all of the asylum seekers who are coming to Chicago. Those are jobs that we talk about needing to address, quote, the root causes of crime among youth in Chicago. You are, by eliminating this wage, pulling up the ladder, in effect, on those people for those first entry-level jobs that can really be a ladder to a better life.
I'm not in this field, but I've never thought of restaurateurs as the bad guys, the guys who are paying these people a sub-wage and therefore taking advantage of them. Maybe that is the case, but when you do talk to them, I want to pick it up here in just a minute with you, Austin. Stay right there. You get the impression that they, even if they sort of saw this coming, don't know what they're going to do about it. They don't know how they're going to make up for the increase in labor cost. Now, Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute is chatting with us. So it's the sub-minimum tipped wage going up 20% a year for 5 years, so that ultimately it'll be a 40% total increase from about $9 an hour to $16 an hour for waiters and waitresses, bartenders, people that do nails, people that cut hair. By the way, I just wonder, too, Austin, how much of this money is really tracked? You know, how much of the payments to a lot of these people, say tips or paying your hairdresser, nail tech, or whatever. I wonder how much of that is cash. And
oh, it's a lot of cash. And I think actually one of the under-discussed reasons that the city is going through with this is it's in some sense a tax grab, right? You're increasing the amount of, you might not be increasing the total income for servers like we talked about. You are increasing the total taxable income for those people when it shows up on a pay stub rather than in a cash tip. I think that is one big reason for doing that.
And I guess it should be, but boy, they sure never talk about that. I have not heard, except for one person who I described as a little cynical who called me last week and said that's what it is. And I thought, I never even thought about it that way. The reason they're doing this is not to help those people, it's to take more of their money. Do you really think that's a driving force in this?
I think part of it is in terms of taxes. You also want to think about it in terms of the efforts to unionize a lot of these workplaces, right? It's a lot harder to take union dues out of people's cash tips than it is out of their paychecks. And again, it's like, you know, people should pay their taxes, right? I'm not arguing people should avoid taxes. But the actual impact of this is going to be a reduction in job opportunities for the people who need them most right now in Chicago. And in terms of the customer experience, this is going to lead to more reduction in our human interaction when we go to these places. It's not going to be servers or bartenders. It's going to be food runners. It's going to be those tabletop tents. It's going to be QR codes where you order at your table. And I think in a real way, it's actually going to tear away a bit at sort of the social fabric of what we expect at bars and restaurants in the city.
It's another interesting thought. I was, before the break, just talking about how the people that manage or own these restaurants are going to do. And you ask them, and we have several times on the Wintrust Business Lunch, starting in about 11 minutes here. So what's your plan? And there does not seem to be any consensus. None of them want to raise prices, but many of them will say, yeah, that's something we have to start thinking about. It doesn't have to go up apples to apples, the same amount, because the cost of the employees isn't the only cost they bear. So we won't see a 40% or 20% increase, say. But we're almost certainly going to have to see some sort of increase in the cost at the table, right?
Right, or just a change in the experience. There's a bunch of different levers you can pull. But what I think oftentimes what city council and what Mayor Brandon Johnson and what the Chicago Teachers Union, who's also backing this, fail to understand is that there's only so much that you can squeeze these productive businesses. The margins in restaurant work are some of the most razor thin margins of any industry. And everybody, I think, knows that famous sort of quote about how many restaurant businesses close in their first 5 years of operations. If you drive down a street like Lincoln Avenue or something, those storefronts that have had four or five or six different restaurants in them over the last few years. It's so competitive. And when people come in with these high-minded slogans and say they're really going to help workers, they have to think about the fact that there's a lot of unintended consequences to that. One of them is that businesses are going to have to change. One of those changes will be that they're not hiring as many people. Yeah, and this is what's so frustrating when Johnson is talking about, we need to have root causes. We need to have young people with jobs. A great job for a young person is a tipped worker at a restaurant or some kind of establishment, right? This will take those opportunities away.
Your texts and your phone calls with Austin Berg. Well, then why does Austin think this was successfully put through? I believe it'll hurt most servers overall. Why was it successful then?
Because I think the interests pushing it are not the people who are going to bear the impact. It's pushed by large labor unions in the public sector, government sector, like Chicago Teachers Union, and the quasi-private sector like the SEIU. This is really a signature political win for the mayor that he gets to spike the football on. Same thing with some of the aldermen who voted for it. And it wasn't unanimous. I believe there's around 10 or so no votes. But that's the reason. The reason is because the people taking this action aren't the ones who really bear the cost.
Hey, Steve, Bertrand, jump in here. What is your thought?
Okay, so Austin is a lot smarter than I am. But if the argument is that the workers aren't going to be paid more because the bosses already have to make up what they don't get from the minimum wage, right? So if they get $10 in an hour, they have to make up the difference if they don't get tipped up to the current minimum wage, okay? So if that's the case, if they're already paying the full minimum wage to all these workers, it seems to me that restaurant costs aren't going to go up at all.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, right. I mean, either way, they're already essentially paying a minimum wage.
They're already paying them that wage. Now, I'll hang up and listen to Austin tell me I'm wrong.
Well, they are only if, but I guess they are only if the amount the person makes is less than the minimum wage. I don't want to get confused here, but
right.
Austin, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Well, I take an issue with the first part of Steve's comment that I'm smarter than him. That is demonstrably false. And all the, you can listen to the back episodes of Mincing Rascals with Steve if you want proof of that.
Yes,
it's a really, really good question. And the answer is a little bit more complicated, I think, that I can answer completely on the radio. But the point of this is that in expectations in their future hiring decisions, this becomes a lot more difficult for restaurants to hire those types of workers and accelerates the transition away from people who are even in that sort of tipped category into an untipped category, because they want to be able to keep their prices as low as possible. And we have really good research on this. There's a great paper from two Harvard economists last year who are definitely way smarter than me, I think in August of last year, that sort of outlines how this functions economically. And the fact is, some workers get higher wages. It's totally true. But hiring slows, and that has real effects on people's ability to get jobs.
If I was one of those, by the way, thank you, Steve. He'll be on with Lisa Dent after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News, and a little before that if he wants to kick some sand my way. But if I was one of those six-figure waiters at one of the nicer restaurants in the city, I think I would be really upset about this, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's essentially you're taking away some of the earnings you would otherwise have in cash. And that's why you see this was by no means a unanimous cry from service sector workers in the city to have this. There were several op-eds in big papers. I believe even folks who called into your show, John, who said, yeah, they say that they're doing this in my name, but I'm not asking for this. I would prefer the tips the way they are.
Wonder if some of the people that were there with the T-shirts on at the rally are going to rue the day. Cyrus, you're on WGN with Austin. What was your thought? You had a question about tips. What was it?
Yeah, so I'm in the service industry. I drive for a living, and we get tipped also. The one thing nobody's talking about is the level of service that the employee gives. How many times have you been in a restaurant in the last 2 months, and you got to ask three times for silverware, for salt and pepper, for extra water? And the people sometimes are just, they disappear in the back by the kitchen, and you're like, wow. And this guy expects a good tip. So now the guy who doesn't give the great service is going to get the same amount as the person who gives fantastic service. And you'd love to tip 20-25%. I have coworkers who, you know, dress like slobs and expect to get tip when they drive something for, you know, from Lockport to O'Hare. And you're like, oh, man, they didn't give me a tip. And you're like, well, first of all, you're dressed like a slob, and your car's dirty, and you didn't even offer to carry their head in their bag. So the people who do go above and beyond are the ones that are going to get hurt on this.
Cyrus, thanks for the phone call. Last thought on that, Austin?
No, I think that's right. And the nature, this is in some sense a spiritual war on tipping itself, right? Because tipping creates inequality. There are some people who go above and beyond and want to be recognized for that. And there are some people who don't want to give them the ability to do that. I think he's spot on.
Nice to talk to you, Austin. Are you going to be able to join us, do you think, this Wednesday on the Mincing Rascals?
Yes, sir. I'll be there.
I don't mean to pressure you. If you can't make it, we'll give you a pass. But we always appreciate you being part of the pod. That's Wednesdays, the Mincing Rascals. And you can read his stuff with his colleagues at the Illinois Policy Institute website. Okay, Austin, thank you, sir.
Take care.